recording. Okay, Rabbi, so today's daf is daf Chav Beis, but we're holding on Chav Aleph on the Beis, the second wide line where the Gemara starts Ammar Mar, in the middle of the line. The Gemara refers to what we spoke about in the Yomad Aleph. Back in the Yomad Aleph, we said that there were 10 Nisim in the Beis HaMikdash, and one of the Nisim was that Ashon HaMarocha Afilu Kol Rucha Sheba Oilam Ba'ois Umanashvis Boy Ein Mezizis Oismim Koimai. The Oshan, the smoke that came up from the Marocha, we're not talking about the Oshan of the Ketores, we're talking about the Oshan of the Marocha where they used to go and burn every day the Hekter Chalavim Ve'evvarim on the Marocha. That Oshan Afilu Kol Rucha Sheba Oilam, even if all the winds in the world would come, boys from an ashway, so it would blow against it. They would not cause that Ashana Marocha to be dispersed or to be pushed away. That was one of the Nisim. Zokimar Avamar, Chof Aleph Amid Beis. V'Ashana Marocha, you talk about the Ashana Marocha, Umi have Ashana Marocha. I don't even think there was smoke coming from the Marocha. Why not? But Tanya have a brisa. Chamisha devarim nemru be eish shel marocha. There were five things said about the fire on top of the marocha. Number one, it's revutza ka'ari, that it is crouching like a lion. Ubara kachama, and you see the flames and they are as crystal clear like the rays of the sun. V'yesh b'mamish, and the flames are tangible. V'yecheles lachem v'yeveshin, and the fire is so intense it consumes both those items which are moist and those as if they were dry. In other words, you put on these fresh evarim that have on them all of the fresh flesh of the animal, as well as the fats and all the rest. Even though they are fresh, they are burned to a crisp very quickly as if they were dried. The einam al oshan, and that eish does not produce any smoke. It remains as a fire, no smoke comes up. You just said a moment ago that the nest was that the smoke did go up, it just didn't get dispersed.
Column.
In a column, it just didn't get dispersed by all of the Ruchai Shabbailam. Everything Markika Omrina bid the Hedjoit. On the Marocha we had two fires. We had the fire that was the heavenly fire from a Kodesh Baruch Hu, and then we had the fire that was brought by Bnei Yodam, by people down below. Decided, like it says, V'nosom Bnei Haran HaKoyin, Ein Shalom Mizbeach. The Bnei Har Nakoyim, meaning Nodav Aviyu, they brought the fire onto the Mizbeach. Afal pi she'eish yoredes min ha-shamayim, even though fire comes down from the heavens, mitzvah lahavi min ha-hedyot, nevertheless, it's a mitzvah to go and bring additional fire. And so therefore, the fire that comes from heaven does not produce smoke. The fire that comes from Bnei Odom, from the Kahanim, that does produce the smoke. Frank Dimora, you just said now that the fire was Revut Sukari, it was crouching on top of the Mizbeach like a lion. What time we have a price on Rab Chanina's Kana Kehana? Ani Riyasiya, I was there, says Rab Chanina, and I saw it. Ravutza Kekelev, and the form of the fire was that of a dog, not the form of a lion. The Tumalai Kasha, Kana Mikdashisha, Kana Mikdashaini. Tams Mikdashrishai, Ravutza Kari. Mikdashaini, it was Ravutza Kekelev. Why is Kari, why is Kekelev? So the Marsha explains, because the first place Mikdash was built by Shlomo HaMelech. Shlomo HaMelech, they were all descended from Yehuda. And it says by Yehuda, there's Ka'ariyeh, he's like an Ari. Masha Enkin, the second base ministry, was built by the Persians. And says the Marshav, there's a posik that says that the Persians are Nimshal, are compared to that of a dog. So that's why the fire had a different appearance between the first base ministry and the second base ministry. Right, Imar of Mikdashayni Mihava, was there in fact any Eish from Shamayim that came down to the Mizbeach from the heavens in the second base of Mikdash? Vomer of Shmuel Bar Inyam Ma'irach Siv, it says in the Pasuk, V'yerotzevoy V'yikavdoh. Now you say V'yikavdoh, I don't see the hay. So Timar V'karinin Ikavdoh. It's not missing a hay, but we read it as if there was a hay at the end of the word V'yikavdoh. Right, Imar Ma'ishn of the Mechusah, hey, why is it not missing a hay? No. Is it a printing mistake? No! It's missing a hay in Tanakh.
Hashem is fired.
Exactly. These are five things. Hay means five. Five things which were missing. Mikdash Rishon did not have five items, so to speak, that were present in the Mikdash Rishon. What are those? The Elohim. The Oroin, the Kapoiris, Ukruvim. Eish, Ushchina, Vuruch HaKodesh, Vurum V'tum. And if you count all of these together, you'll quickly find that there are seven Orim, Kaporis, and Krum is 3, H is 4, Shechin is 5, Ruchakir is 6, Urim, Vatum is 7. So Rashi conveniently says that Orim, the Kaporis, Ukruvim are really one and the same. Why? Because on top of the Orim was the Kaporis. Kaporis was the lid on top of the Orim. And growing out, or not growing out, but forming out.
Emanating from
Shkoyach, thank you. Emanating from the Kaporis were the two Kruvim. These are not Shlomo Melech's Kruvim that we spoke about yesterday. These are Moshe Rabbeinu's Kruvim. So therefore, this is one, a package deal, if you will. So therefore, the Orim Kaporis, the Kruvim was all missing. Number two was missing the Eish. Oh, that Eish Manashamayim didn't come down, apparently. That was number two. Shechina, unfortunately, Shechina was not shared. We had this thing more before. Yaft elikim liyefes v'yishkin ba'olei shem. That even though Kadosh Baruch Hu permitted that the second base of Midrash be built through Yefes, the Einiklech of Yefes were paras. Remember, we had the Pasuk earlier. Anyway, but v'yishkin ba'olei shem, but the Shechina was shoyer ba'olei shem in the oil of Shlomo Melech in the first base of Midrash, not in the second one. V'ruach HaKodesh, there was no longer Ruach HaKodesh at the time of the second base of Midrash, and there was missing the Urim V'Tumim inside the Choshen, they no longer had the Urim V'Tumim. Anyway, one of the five is that we're missing is the Eish. And you just said a moment ago, there was Eish Min HaShemayim, it just wasn't Revutza Kari, it was Revutza
Keles.
Evidi Mor Amri, in Mihava Hava. Yes, there was in fact an Eish that came in HaShemayim. But that it says that there was no Eish means Siyu Eloi Messiah. It didn't help. Meaning, that what's the reason why you have fire? To go and consume the Kabbonis on the Mizbeach. Unfortunately, in the second base of Midrash, the fire lost its power, its potency, to be able to go and consume the Kabbonis that were put on the Marach. So how did it burn? It burned from the human fire that the humans, that the Kahanim, put on the Mizbeach. But the heavenly fire, unfortunately, no longer worked. Tanarban, Sheish Isher is saying, there are six different types of fires. Yesh Echeles Ve'ne Shoyser, V'yesh Shoyser Ve'ne Echeles, V'yesh Echeles V'shoyser, V'yesh Echeles Lachen Kievation, V'yesh Eish Doiche Eish, V'yesh Eish Echeles Eish. What are all of these six? So the Gemara now explains each one individually. Yesh Eish Echeles Ve'ne Shoyser, a fire that consumes things which are solid, but it does not burn liquids. Hadidon, well, that's ours. When we make a fire, it burns the wood or whatever is in the fire, but it doesn't burn the liquids. Liquids might evaporate, but they don't get burned. So that's our fires. Shoyis v'nechelas. What's a fire that drinks and doesn't eat? That's the choylin. That's referring to, unfortunately, people that are very, very sick, and they have a fever which feels like fire. Fire is consuming their body. What do they need as an antidote? All they need to do is drink to be able to go and get back a little bit to their senses. But they have no desire to eat. They're so weak because of the heavy fire and fever that they're not interested in eating, but they are interested in drinking because they need that drink to settle them down, to cool themselves off. So that's the choy. You have the Oicheles Vishoise de Elio. You have of Elio and Navi, that when he was in Har HaKarmel, that he asked the Kodesh Baruch Hu, send down a fire. And if you remember, Elio wanted to go and show that this was heavenly fire. This wasn't some sort of kishif. And what he first did was he took the carbon and doused it with so much water that it created a ta'ola. Ta'ola means like a ditch of water out and outside of this oven. He put the carbon on top of an oven, on top of a stone, poured huge amounts of water on top of it so it would really be wet. And then he asked the Kodesh Baruch Hu, send out a flame from upstairs. And that flame came down, that not only did the fire consume the carbon instantaneously, but it even caused the water down below in the ta'ala, in this ditch, also to become totally drunk up. And therefore, as a result of this intense fire, that took care of not only the ochel, but also the shoser. Not only did it eat up, but it also consumed all of the liquid, also instantaneously. Oicheles lachem v'kivation, that it's such a strong fire that it eats and consumes things which are as moist as if they were dry. That's the marocha. That's the eish marocha that we just spoke about a moment ago, that it was a very strong fire. Yesh eish doicha eish. One eish pushes away another fire. That's the Gabriel. That's the one we had before about Hanani Mishael Bazaria, that they were thrown into the kifshon eish, and then the Kodesh Baruch Hu sent Gabriel. Gabriel was able to go and cool off the fire, even though Gabriel himself is the Malach HaMemuna al Eish. He is in charge of fire. See, he sent down the fire to go and cool off the fire in the furnace, and ultimately he used his fire, Gabriel, to go and burn all of those people that threw Hanani, Mishael, Azari into the Kivshon Eish. So Eish Toich Eish means his fire pushed away the fire inside the furnace. Finally, the Eish Oicheles Eish, one fire that consumes another fire, that's the Shechinah, that means of Kadosh Baruch Hu. Diyom Amar, Hoishe Detzvoy B'Neyem, this Sarfan. What is this Gemara referring to? This is referring to when Kadosh Baruch Hu created the world, and he created mankind, and some Malachim came in front of Kadosh Baruch Hu, and they said, Mo Enoish Kisis Karenu, what are you bothering with mankind? They're only going to cause trouble, they're not going to do the mitzvahs, they're only going to be sinful. What do you need it for? Kadosh Baruch Hu was not interested in this advice, and then he took his finger, put it beinayim between these malachim, and these malachim were malachi eish, fire-dick angels. Kadosh Baruch Hu went himself and he burned the angels with his fire. So that's an eish which consumes fire, which consumes eish. Frank Dimara, we said that one of the 10 miracles was, V'ashana marocha afilu kol rucha shaba'olam, even if all the winds in the world come, it cannot dispel and disperse the ocean, the smoke coming up from the marocha. To go and see in which direction it will go and be noted. What do we mean? So Rashi means, because it says in the Gemara, in Masechtas Rosh Hashanah, where the Gemara talks about the different Rosh Hashanim throughout the year. So it says in the Mishnah, "V'chag nidoinin al hamayim," that the decisions regarding whether there will be enough water throughout the year for the animals, for the crops, for mankind, etc., all of those decisions are made on Chag, on Sukkot. And that's the reason why we have the Nisach Hamayim on Sukkot. So, bottom line is that Chag nidoinin al hamayim. So now, after Yom Tov is over, people wanted to be able to go and tell what is likely to be the outcome for this year. Is there going to be a very great rainfall, or is it going to be shvach? And how would they able to go and determine? They would determine that by looking at the Hashanah Marocha, and they would see in which way it would go and it would smoke. So it says, I'm reading about Avdimi, when it's so yon to v'achron shulchag, motze yon to v'achron means motze shmini atzeres, motze simchas toira. Ha'akol tzoifin l'Hashanah Marocha, everybody's waiting to go and look at the Hashanah Marocha and see in which direction it is traveling. No, until the klapi tzofen, if it's going towards the northern side, aniyim semeichem balabatim atzeifem, then that means that the aniyim will be very happy. The balabatim are going to be sad. Neshigishme shana merubin or peresein markivim. When you have a wind that goes towards tzofen, this is by definition a southern wind, which is going now and pushing the Hashanah Marocha towards the north. It shows that there's going to be lots of rain in the forthcoming year, and because there's going to be so much rain, the balabatim all of the fruits are going to be nice and plump and ripe, and because of the fact that they are so plump and so moist, they have a greater chance of rotting. If they would be scrawny, dried out fruit, they wouldn't rot so quickly. But because there's going to be so much rain, there's also going to be much more crops and much more fruits than usual. The balabatim won't be able to go and sell them that quickly because it's just such a huge volume. So they're going to be upset because the prices are going to go down. The aniyim are going to be very happy because it means the prices will down, be easier for them to go and buy more food. So aniyim asmeichem balabatim atem neshigish mishana merubin. Tons and tons of rain, peresein markivin, and the peres, because of the large volume and the quality of the peres, they're going to rot more quickly. Not the klabi dorm, forget. If the wind is going to go towards the south, that means that there's a powerful northern wind which is pushing it. Aniyim atzeim, and then the aniyim are going to go and be upset. Balabatim smech, the balabatim are going to be happy. Neshigishme shanam uot, and there's not going to be that much rain this coming year. Upreisei mishtamrim, and the peres are going to be able to go and have a shmir, they'll stick around for longer. Yeah, you want something?
Who are the balabatim?
Balabatim means the regular people, you know, regular people that are in mischar, that are in business, regular businessmen.
Okay, not people that take care of the
Nothing to do with the Beis Medrash. It means just regular businessmen who are in the business of agriculture.
Business.
And they're taking care of agriculture, because in those days, that was the basic...
agrarian society.
Exactly. It was an agricultural society. So, the Peiros say in Mishtamrin, because there are not that many Peiros, there is a Kishmei Shana Mulatin, so people will store the Peiros, and they
prices
will...
Prices will go up.
The prices will go up, so the Aniyim are going to be upset, the Balabatim will be happy. Not the Klavi Mizrach, if the winds are coming from the west towards the east and pushing the ocean towards the east. Halkas Mech, everybody will be happy. Why? Because the amount of rain is going to be exactly the amount that we need. Not too much, not too little. So the Balabatim will be happy, and the Aniyim will be happy. Altsasan Gibalak. Klapi Marv, exactly, amazing. Klapi Marv, however, if the eastern winds are coming, Hakalat Seven, then everybody's going to be upset. Why is everybody going to be upset? So Rashi says, because the Ruach that comes from the east is Miyabeshes, Eses Ren. It dries out the crops, and therefore you're going to have big headlines in all the papers, and then the corn crop all dried out, and the barley crop, and the wheat crop, and then it's all sun-baked, and sun this, and they're all, everybody will be upset. Anyway, but what do I see from this? That in fact the Hashanah Merachah would be pushed by the winds towards the west and towards the east and towards the north. You just said a moment ago that one of the Nisim was Kol Rucha Shebo'olam Ein Mezizus Oisimim Koimai. And you remember Daniel said before, that means it goes straight up like a column. It's not going straight up like a column, it's moving to the west and to the east and the red. What's going on here? Everything more the Ozl the Osi Kidikli Vavduri Loi Have a Mivdar. It's similar to palm trees in Miami Beach, that when there's an intense wind, you see how they tend to swerve, to sway back and forth in this direction, that direction. However, it still remains intact. It's not that it gets dispersed. Here we're talking about the same thing applies to the smoke. The smoke remains in a column. Yes, sometimes the column will sway to the right and to the left and to the north and to the south, but it all remains intact as one column. And that's what he means, that the Kol Rucha Shebo'olam Ein Mezizus Oisimim Koimai, it doesn't cause the smoke to disperse or to move in different directions. It all stays in one place, in one column. Okay, now with respect, particularly with respect to the western and the eastern winds, the Gemara says, I got a problem. What do I have a problem? We just finished saying that, for instance, if the winds pushed the Hashanah Merachah towards the Mizrach side, Lemushel, not the Klapi Mizrach, Hakos Mechem, which means these are western winds, which are pushing the ocean towards Mizrach, towards the east. Everybody's happy. So the western wind sounds like it's a good wind. On the other hand, we said the Klapi Mara, the eastern winds that pushes the ocean towards the west, Hakos Mechem, everybody's upset. So western winds are good, eastern winds are bad. Omamah, Klapi Mizrach HaKol Tzmeichem, Klapi Marav HaKol Tzeim. Ready more mini, I'll have a kasha. Mizrach is the eastern wind, La'olam Yofa, that's the best one. Marav is La'olam Kasha, that's the worst one. It's just the opposite of what we just said now. We just said Klapi Mizrach HaKol Tzmeichem, Klapi Mizrach means the western wind going towards Mizrach, everybody's happy. So the western wind is good. And here you're saying Marav is La'olam Kasha, that is bad. And vice versa, the same thing with Gabi Klapi Marav. That means the eastern wind, which pushing the Marocha towards the west, that's bad. And now we're saying Mizrach is always good. Lo'olam Yofa. So make up your mind. And the Braisa continues, Ruach Tzafoynis Yofa L'chitin, B'shoah She'viu Shlish, B'kosh L'zezim Izman She'hein Choytin. The northern wind, if the northern wind blows at the time that the Chitin have reached a third of their growth, then that is perfect. Why is it perfect? Because the northern winds do not bring that much water with them. So therefore, from now, the chitim, from the third till the end, they will grow in a drier type of environment, so they're not going to rot, and they're going to grow well. Koshla zeisim, however, it's not good for the zeisim, is man chein choytin, when they have their chanota, when they're about to go and blossom, because they need tons of water. Without tons of water, they're not going to dry, they're not going to grow properly. On the other hand, ruch droim is koshla chitim, it's not good for the chitim b'shosh aviyo shlish, once they hit a shlish, because that means there's going to be a lot of water, and that lot of water is already, we don't need it anymore. We needed it when the chitim were originally seeded, and when they originally started growing. But once it hits a third, too much water is no good. The offal zeitim, but good for the zeitim, b'sman shein choytim, when they are blossoming, they need that type of water to go make them fuller and more gishmak and all of that.
More plump.
Plump, exactly. So bottom line is we have a problem with the eastern and with... Oh, we're not finished yet. The Yom Rav Yosef, the Yisimimar, Zutra, Simonach. If you want to remember, after all, when you close the Gemara, you have to start remembering, Which was the good one? Was it the northern west. Wind? Was it the southern wind? Was it good for this? Was it good for
not
that?
East.
Ah, so it says the Gemara b'simanach. The siman is shulchan b'tzafayin u'menoira b'doroim. Hayim mar b'diday v'hayim mar b'diday. What does he mean? We're distinguishing in the last two cases about the northern wind and the southern wind between whether or not the chitim will have a benefit or whether the zaysim will have a benefit. So he said the Ruach Tzafonis is good for the chitim, but it's not good for the zaysim. Now guess what? The shulchan in the heichel was on the Ruach Tzafon, was on the northern wall. Ah, so the Ruach Tzafonis, that northern wind is good for chitim. Chitim is the wheat from which we make the lechem upon him, which is on the shulchan. So therefore, the tzafon wind takes care of its own. And the same thing is legabe the ruach droimis, the southern wind. That southern wind that brings a lot of water, that's good for the zeisim, it's good for the olives. The olives were used to produce olive oil. Olive oil is what they lit in the menorah. And the menorah is on the southern wall. So therefore, the southern wind is good for the zeisim, for the southern oil, for the olive oil used in the menorah. And therefore, the Gemara says that shulchan is b'tzafin. So therefore, the west, the northern wind is good for the chitim, which are in tzafin. Menorah is bedorim, and therefore the southern wind is good for the menorah, for the olive oil used in menorah. Hay marbi d'day, v'marbi d'day. Each one takes care of its own. The northern wind takes care of the chitim on the shulchan, and the southern wind takes care of the olive oil on the menorah in the dark. But getting back to the original kasha, here it says the eastern wind is good, and here it says the eastern wind is bad, and here it says that the western wind is good, and here it says the western wind is bad. Make up your mind. It depends whether you're talking about Eretz Yisrael or whether you're talking about in Bavel. Bavel, by definition, was a very, very moist country because it was low-lying in valleys, and therefore they had the benefit of all the rain coming down from the side of the mountain, and during the early spring and summer you had a lot of the snow that was melting was coming down the mountains. You had waterfalls, etc. So it was very, very moist down below. They don't need new moisture, the Shem Genuk. Eretz Yisrael, however, on the other hand, did not have a lot of water because Eretz Yisrael was mainly Eretz Horim Ubekois. Lots of mountains, lots of hills. And therefore, it dries up quickly. So we need a lot of water for them. So therefore, depending on whether you have a dry atmosphere or a wet atmosphere, do you need the dry winds or do you need the wet winds? Let's look at the last Rashi. Halan v'alahu mizrachas yofle aretz, the eretz bavel, shehi eretz lacha, because it's a moist land, machmas memeh li'olam, it has tons of natural waters. Le'eretz Yisrael kosher, shehi eretz harim b'koyis, um eretz livish. Therefore, this needs more water, this needs more dry. We start the next paragraph. Look to the Gemara, look to Mishnah. We are going to talk now about the Truma Sadeshen. When was the Truma Sadeshen performed? As you'll recall from the previous Mishnah, throughout the year it was the Kriyas HaGever, Machloikis, whether Gever means a person, the crier, whether it means the rooster, Machloikis Rav and Reb Shila. When is that? That's Amud HaShachar time. Amud HaShachar is 72 minutes before Netzach Hamah. Netzach Hamah today is 5:53, so if you go back 72 minutes, you get sometime like 4:30 or something like that, 4:40. So that's Amud HaShachar. That's when they did the Truma Sadeshen on a daily basis. And then on Yom Kippur, they used to do it at Chatzos, midnight. And on Yom Tovim, they did it at 10 o'clock, B'soif HaShmoy Rishayim. So it says Yimara, who determined who's going to do the Truma Sadeshen? What means Truma Sadeshen? Truma Sadeshen means that every day of the year, regardless of the amount of ash which had accumulated on the Mizbeach, a Kohen had to go up and remove some of the ash, a symbolic amount. We're not talking about huge amounts of ash, we're just talking about a symbolic amount. He would take that amount down the Kevesh, go now to the next to the ramp, go and place it on the ground, and then it was Nivla bin Komo, it was miraculously swallowed up by the earth. So now, who got the kibud of running up and taking the Truma Sadeshen and removing it and putting it down? So says the Gemara, says the Mishnah, for Rishoyna initially, Kol Misha writes a litter of Mizbeach Torah, whoever wanted to, I volunteer. Mechubit HaKubit HaTorah, you take the Truma Sadeshen, no problem. It was Manchi Merubin. That's good if you only have one or two people. So what happens if you have 5, 10, 20 Kohanim and they all want to do it? So initially they allowed there to be a competition. And they had what they had. They had what we would call today a marathon. Marathon means they ran up the Kevesh. It's Manchi Merubin.
A marathon is more a long distance. This would be a sprint, maybe.
Okay. I stand corrected. They didn't do a marathon, they did a sprint. So they sprinted up the Kevish. Kevish is the ramp towards the Mizbeach. Kolakoidim es chaber ba'arba amos. Whoever beat out his chaver in the four amois. What do the four amois mean? The Gemara will talk about that on the bottom of the Amud, but the Gemara is going to conclude it means the four amois that approach the top of the Mizbeach. Remember that the Kevish itself was 32 amois long, and we're not talking about flat amois. These are amois which are going at an incline, at an angle, a ramp going up to the top of the Mizbeach. So that was 32 amois. The Mizbeach itself was 32 amois. So therefore, one would normally say, so you add the two together, you get 64. But we had the previous parak, it's only 62, because the top of the ramp went and overlapped over the Amma Sovev and the Amma Yesod. We're going to talk about that on the bottom of the Amud. Stay tuned. So when it says here at the top of the Mishnah that whoever beat out his chaver within the Arba Amos, that means start with the Mizbeach, go downwards on the Kevesh, measure out four Amos, whichever Kohen got into those four Amos first, he was Zoycha, he went over the finish line before his chaver, and he was the one that was Zoycha and Trubas Hadesh. What happens if both of them are equally able to sprint and they are exactly the same? You have a YouTube, it goes viral, and everybody says they went on the finish line, both exactly the same. What do you do now? I'm sorry?
A photo finish.
Oh, so what do you do? So Amun Oimel Hen, whoever was in charge of the Paisos, Paisos means of these lotteries, he said, it's Bill. Okay, Rabbi Yisai, we're going to go and, we would say today, choose it out. But here we're not going to choose it out because it's not only the two that were the ones that had the photo finish, but rather all the Kahanim that were there in the Azara who competed, who wanted to compete for this job of doing the Trumas Hadeshen, all of them would now be part of this lottery. Now, exactly how did this lottery work? Now, we've already referred to this lottery in the past. It's not that you go and take lots out of a hat, similar by the two Seirim that we had on Yom Kippur, the Sar Lashem, Sar Lazazel. That's not how it works. But we'll see Rashi momentarily that all the Kahanim that were there at that moment would stand in a circle, and the Mamunim was the person who was in charge of the Paisos. We had back in Mesechta Shkolim that there was someone who was Mamunah ala Paisos. He would go now and he would start counting the Kahanim in a circle. Now, how do you remember which coin you started off from? So we'll see in a moment they took off the mitznefes. Mitznefes means they took off the hat that the Kohen was wearing, that only that one, put it on the side, and then he would be number one, and you'd go around and around. Let's assume that they were 10, 20, 30 Kahanim. They would take an abnormal type of multiple. For instance, if they were 30 Kahanim, they would say, we're going to count up to 100. This way we won't be able to figure out in advance who's going to win and who's going to lose. Each Kohen would stick out one or two fingers, but not the agudel, not the thumb. So let's assume either the index finger or the middle finger or two together. And the mamuna would now start counting. Everybody sticks out the fingers and we count the fingers. One, two, three, four, five, and rum, go all the way around. And if we haven't hit all the kahanim yet, he would keep on going two, three, four, five times until we reach the magic number that he had selected initially. Mm. And that person who was the final number, number 100, Lamashal, you get to do the Trumas Hadeshen. So let's take a quick look at the Rashi, who explains this much better than I do. It's about the fourth, fifth of the narrow lines of Rashi, right? 8, 9 lines from the top. If both of them reach the finish line at the same time, neither of them is Zocheh, because it's photo finish.
They're tied.
Now everybody that was there, all the Kahanim, they all participate in the Goyel. What is this Goyel? He says to all of them, Hitzbiyu. What means Hitzbiyu? Hoitziu etzboi sechem. Stick out your fingers. Kol echad yara etzboi. Each one has to go and stick out one finger or two. Can refer to come on the pirkin, like we'll have in greater detail later in our perek. Makifin. They made a hakofa, meaning they have a circle. Va'im de bagula. Bo hamamuna v'noitul mitznefes mi'al roish sholechem mehen. He removes the hat from one of them. Umimenu payis maschel. So he's the first one that we're going to count. He's going to be number one. Umimenu payis maschel limonis. Umoitzikol echad yechetz bo'i l'minyan. Each one sticks out the finger. Va'amuna oimer kosha minyan kola boy. Whoever the minyan ends with him. Number 100 l'mushul. Who's oicha? And now, umoitzimi pith. And now he himself declares what the magic number is. the minyan, or meya, for instance, 100, or shishim, or 60. Har b'yoyisim ishahoyu sham ha-kehanim. Many, many more times than the kehanim that are there. As we start counting for the one that we took off the hat, the soiv ha-holich, and he now goes around in the circle. U'mayna v'choyzer chalila. Choyzer chalila means that he does it a second time and a third time. Ad soiv ha-minyan, until we finish the full number. U'misha minyan kolob boy. The one that the minyan ends with him, number 100 or number 60, who was Aycha b'chem chal pais. The same thing applies to all of the pais. It's not this one, as we'll see a little bit later in the Mishnah. There were four paises every single day.
So, in other words, if there was a photo finish, then they brought in everybody.
Everybody that was there in the azar.
Right. So initially, if one guy got it, he got it. But if there's a two in contention, then everybody came in.
The reason why they did it that way is because they always did it by lots. That is, by counting the around and around. If there are only two people, it's easy. If it's going to be an odd number, then number one is going to win. If it's going to be an even number, the second guy is going to go and win, right? If you have only two people. So, number 100, fine. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. We know who's going to win. It's the even. And if you're going to take 101, and then it's going to be the odd person who's going to win. So that's why you have to go and take everybody together, all 25, 30 kahanim, those that were there initially and competed, and the contestants. Unfortunately, not everybody can sprint as quickly as others. As you know from the New York Marathon, why 60,000 people run, and only 3 or 4 get to the finish line quickly, all the rest come by 24 hours later, or whatever. So, you take everybody together, and you do this goyel. So says the Mishnah Vayta, Hamuna Oymel Hem Tzpiu, Umahin Moitzin, how many fingers do they stretch out? Achas Ishtayim, 1 or 2. They might see an agudal, but don't stretch out your agudal, the thumb. The reason is, says Rashi, very simply, because if you stretch out two separate fingers, the thumb and lamushal, the second or the third finger, because of the fact that there's such a wide distance, the mamuna might count you twice and just count me once, because he sees these spread out fingers. He thinks it's the guy before you or the guy in back of you. And therefore, only two close fingers, but not something like the agudal, which could deceive. Bamigdish, v'im mitzin agudal bamigdish. Period. Ma'is show you shnei shavim. There was once a time that two contestants, two kahanim, ran up, and they were both photo finish. V'rotz of oilim akevish, and one of them really was so desperate to win that unfortunately his yetzahara got the best of him. V'dofach dochaf echem mehenes chaveray. One contestant pushed the other one down. The nafali takafel v'nishbarag v'nebach. He broke a leg. We'll see in tomorrow in the Gemara another such circumstance, but it was even worse. Anyway, the Kibbutz Shiroh Bezdin, Shabbani De Sakana, since Bezdin saw, unfortunately, this is leading to potentially dangerous situations, the Skinu, they made a Takana Shlo Yehu, Tornamen Esam Azbeach, Elab Pais, that from now on, no more relying on the Kehanim running up and whoever wins first, and yet B'dieved, we're going to do the Pais, we'll always do the Pais, no matter whether they're 2 Kehanim, 5 Kehanim, 20 Kehanim, 50 Kehanim, we're always going to do the Pais. There were 4 paises every single day. This was the first, and the other 3 mitzvahs we're going to discuss in the forthcoming Mishnayos when we get there. Okay, Frank Timar. We started up Rishoina. They just allowed people to run up. Why didn't they make a pais like all the other avoiders of the day? They have a pais. Why weren't they misakin initially a pais for the Trumas Hadash? Since it's an avodah that takes place at night, remember that the Trumas Hadash is either 10 o'clock at night on Yom Tov, 12 o'clock at night on Yom Kippur, or 4 or 5 o'clock, depending when Amud HaShachar is, Bekrois HaGever. So it's still night. People are going to say, it's not a choshev avodah, because avodah in Beis HaMikdash, by definition, has to be biyoim. It's got to be during the day. If it's at night, it means it's a cleanup type of thing. It's a preparatory, a psachona. But it's not the real mekoy. And therefore, lechai shiva lehu, people will not give it sufficient importance and relevance. But also, people are not going to come. So what do I have to make a pious? And then I find out, I prepare a whole party, and nobody shows up. However, since they saw that, in fact, the kahanim were interested in participating, to the extent that, unfortunately, we had the sakana as set forth in our Mishnah, so they said, okay, if there is really that much interest, then we have to institute, then we have to institute a pious and let them, in a sense, choose it out. Not that we're really choosing it out, but this lottery system. Why are you telling me that because it's avodas laila, it wasn't choshev? But evorim b'torim, the avodas laila, as you know, anything which is left over from the kabbanis, the aymurin, as well as the evorim meaning for the carbon oila, all of the limbs of the animal, every one of those, although you should start putting it on the mizbeach during the day, but if you weren't able to complete putting it on the mizbeach during the day, you could put it on at night. And in fact, that's the first Mishnah Masechtes Brachos that says Hekdu Chalom Mevarim Ksheinim Kol Alayla. So that's an avodas laila. We never left the Kinyan Rabbanan Paisa. We're going to see Mechem, the forthcoming Mishnayos, as we get through Pius 2, Pius 3, Pius 4, that in fact, on putting the Evarim Pedarim on the Mizbeach, there was a Pius for that, even though it's avodas laila. So Manishtana, why do you say this avodas laila, they're not going to be machshiv? They'll say it's not important. That's why initially they didn't make a pious. But by Yevon Pedarim, they initially did make a pious. That's also avodas laila. Everything was save avoida di mami. People, the Kahanim, don't look upon it as being a night type of avoida. They look upon it as being the final avoida di yoyim. Because after all these kabbanas were brought during the day. They shechted them during the day. There was a halachas, the kabbalah sedam, the halachas sedam, the zrika sedam. They went and stripped the hide off of the animals during the day, and they washed out all the innards. Everything was done during the day. If they didn't have enough time to go and finish off with putting the chalov and evorim on the mizbeach during the day, so they finished it off at night. So this is a kind of cleanup of the avoidus yoyim. That's why it had chashivus. Mashen ke the truma sedeshim. Freitimora haynami tchilis avoidu di mamihi. Look upon this as being the very first initial job during the day. Just like you're saying that was the final avodah during the day. So this is the first avodah during the day. How do I know it has that title of the first avodah? The Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Kiddush Yodov. If the Kahanim did the Kiddush Yodayim V'Raglayim, they washed the hands from the Kiyor, the Trumas Adeshen, then Lamachar, meaning a few minutes or an hour later when it becomes day, Trumas Adeshen, remember the latest was around Amud HaShachar. Amud HaShachar, 72 minutes before Netzachama. Netz is when Lamacha, when the next day begins. No, ain't Tzerich L'Kaddish. You don't have to go and do a new Kiddush Adayim V'Raglayim. Shivar Kiddush Mitchilas Avoida, because you already did the Kiddush Adayim V'Raglayim from the very first Avoida. Ah, so what do I see from this? That Trumas Adeshen is considered Tchilas Avoida. It's not just some sort of preparation in the middle of the night. That's the beginning of the avoda. So just like the Hekta Chalom Beivarim is the Saif avoda, this is the Tchilas avoda. Why didn't they institute a pious from the very outset? Why did they have to wait until it was Boli Desakon? Everything more Eimish Kvar Kiddush Metchila La avoda. The whole kasha that you're asking is Rabbi Yochanan's text that he used the words Shekvar Kiddush Mitzchilas Avoida. So it sounds like Kiddush Adayim, sounds like Truma Sedeshen is the very first Avoida. Says Yimor, no. Truma Sedeshen is an Avoida that's done during the night. But Eime Shekvar Kiddush Mitzchilas, since they were ready Mekadosh their hands, they did Kiddush Adayim V'Raglayim for purposes of the Truma Sedeshen, so it's now ready Mekudosh La Avoida for the Avoida that's going to happen subsequently an hour or two later, after the Netzachama, after the sun rises on the horizon. So that's the first pshat. The Ikar Yamid is another version. Again, the kasha is, why didn't they have a pious from the very outset? So I'll tell you why. Meikorosover give the Ikar Oynes Shina. Because people sleep at night, and therefore at the time of Amud HaShachar, many people have not woken up yet, they're still asleep, and even mit the alarm clocks, metalis, they're still sleeping. Is loy also people assume that they're not going to come? Even the chazud yosu, since the chazud yosu, we saw that in fact there were kahanim that decided we want to come to the Trumas Adeshen early in the morning. Because the namely disakana, and even got to the point number chav sakana, even rabbana and paisets, they instituted the pious. We have the same situation, that it's in the middle of the night, people want to go to sleep, presumably they start dozing off, and nevertheless Rabban said, no, it's okay, let's make a pious to the people who are going to do the Evarim Pedarim. So it should be the same thing with Gabi in the morning. In both cases there's an ones of Shina, that sleep comes upon you and you can't dispel the sleeping. Every Marshani Migna Mi Mekem is the difference between sleep when you're trying to go to sleep and sleep early in the morning. What's the difference? So perhaps some of us can relate to this. Rashi says all the way below on the second and the third wide lines, all the way below, Shani Migna Mi Mekim at the end of the line, says Rashi, Noyach Loili Adam Linadid Shina Me Enav Mi Leilach Lishan. It's easier for people to push away the sleep that is coming on his eyes when it's supposed to, when the time is to go to sleep. I'm supposed to go to sleep at 10:30. I'm already yawning and my eyes are up, but I can push it off another half an hour till 11, or push it off until 12, or till 1, or whatever. That is easier to do. Again, a person has more strength and more courage and more vigor to push off the sleep even late into the night, rather than having to get up in the morning early for the time of the Trumas Hadeshim. So this person is going to sleep that night only 4 hours anyway. But nevertheless, it's easier to go to sleep at 1 or 2 o'clock and then get up at 6, as opposed to telling a person go to sleep at 10 and get up at 4 o'clock in the morning. That's just human nature, human tendency, and I think we can relate to it even today. So therefore, when it comes to going and doing Hekter Varm, Chalov Mevarm late into the night, even though they're only going to do it at 12, 1 o'clock, you don't have to go and tell people, oh, you're going to lose some sleep. Well, that's fine. I can stay up until 12, 1, Nishka Problem. So they had to do a pious. But to tell people you got to get up at 3 o'clock and be in the Beis Midrash at 4 o'clock and do Kiddush Adar, oh, get up at 3, 4 o'clock, that's not for me. The reason why they were masakin this pious was the Trumas Hadeshen. There were other avoidos that were included in the same pious. The Sanya, they learned in the Braisa. Mishazach with Trumas Hadeshen, whoever won the pious of the Trumas Hadeshen, he was also Zacha Basida Maracha Bushnei Ziri Eitzim. In other words, he had three jobs. Number one, the one that won the pious, that's this lottery. He was the one that removed the symbolic ash. Number two, he was Masad the Rocha to go and straighten it all up. And then he put the Shnei Gziri Eitzim, two logs on top of it. No, so for those other avoidos, all of this is choshev. For that alone, we should have made a pious, not just because of Trumas Hadeshen. It says, Omer Ravashi. Ravashi says, you have a very good point. But let me tell you historically the way it worked. Shnei Tekonos, there were two Tekonos. Initially, soberly, awesome. They assume nobody's going to come. Who's going to come 4 o'clock in the morning, 4:30 in the morning to do Trumas Hadeshen? Everybody's fast asleep and snoring. Who wants to get up so early? So they didn't bother with a pious. Once they saw, no, in fact, Kehanim, or reason Haman, they got up and they do want to do the Trumas Hadeshen. So much so, unfortunately, one guy pushed the other one down and there was never chasakon. Then they made a pious. Kim the Kim Lepaisa, once they were Masaka the Pais, Layasa, then people stopped coming. Why did people stop coming? Amri Mihemet the Misramilan. Who says I'm going to go and win? In other words, when it's up to me that I'm able to go and run up the Kevesh, well, for the last few days, I've been sprinting every morning before davening. I've been running around town. I've been running the marathon. And I've been making sure to eat the proper amounts and be able to sleep the proper amounts. I'm going to win. So all the 5, 10, 20 Kahanim that showed up and ran up the Kevesh were convinced that they're going to go win. So there was an Oilam. Once you tell them that you have to win the Pais, what's the likelihood I'm going to win the Pais? If it's going to be 20 Kahanim, 5% chance. If they're 50 Kahanim, I'm going to have a 2% chance. So, Sloinzelnish. To get up 3 o'clock in the morning, maybe 5% that I'm going to be chosen the pious. It's just not worth it. And therefore they just stayed in bed and continued sleeping. They also didn't come. Who says I'm going to win? Therefore, and therefore they made a new takana. That this will be a major incentive. We're telling them, not only are you going to do this symbolic ash, which only takes a few seconds. You go up to the Marocha, take some ash, take it down, put it down, you didn't. 60 seconds, you're done. No, you're going to get other choshev avoidus. You're going to be Mesar the Marocha, Shnei Gziri Yaitzim, Kechenes Neisim, and Nefai, so that they would have this incentive to come by and participate in the pious.
Other than the kobos and the honor, are they getting anything substantive?
Yes.
Like a piece of meat to be the
No, they don't get substantive in terms of Schar Ba'olam Hazeh. but they get schar ba'olam haba.
That's what I'm asking.
Because of their burning desire, craving to go and do the avodah of the Beis Hamikdash, Kadosh Baruch Hu gives them all major, major brownie points.
It's a gaiva.
There's, of course, it's a little bit of cover too. That person wants to come home and tell his wife, good news, I won the pious, I did the Truma Sedeshim, I put the Gziri Eitzim, I Nusad the Marocha. About it. Everybody, if a person didn't get a little bit of honor by the Mazeh, he would take away the incentives of people. That's why you give them a shikul kav. Okay, Umizman Shem Merubin. So we said in the Mishnah that initially they would run up and whoever hit the four Amos first. Now the question is, our Mishnah didn't say which four Amos. It just said, Kol HaKodim is Chavera. Oh, that's going to be the answer. But in the meantime, we're in the question. In the Mishnah just said, Kol HaKodim is Chavera Ba'arba Amos. Whoever came into the four Amos first. But it didn't say which four Amos. So it says the Gemara, Omer HaPapa, four lines to the right. Particularly, it's a double posha to me, Arba Amis to Ara Loi. That we're not talking about the four Amis down below before you even reach the Kevesh. Why do I know? Because Ratzav Oil Bekevesh tonight. Obviously, it said in the Mishnah that they were rotten, they were running up the Kevesh. So we don't mean reaching the four Amis down below even before you reach the Kevesh. So maybe it means Kamaisa, means the first four Amis as you run onto the Kevesh. The first four. Now, that cannot be the pshat. Because it says, Oratzim Yoylem Bakevish tonight. That means not only did they start running, but they were Ola Bakevish. So the first four Amis is Achgunish. Vahadar, and then it says in the Mishnah, after Oratzim Yoylem, Vahadar Kalakayim is Chavere. So Muzach Zayin, that we mean more than just the first four Amis. Maybe the Beni Beni. The Beni Beni means the middle, like the middle 20, 24 Amis. We have the bottom four, we have the upper four. Four plus four is roughly eight. Since it's 32 altogether, 32 minus eight would give us 24. Do you mean 24 Amis? The Beni Beni Nami Loi. That doesn't make sense. The Loi Masayim Milzim. There's nowhere in that 24 Amis where you have a line of demarcation. Oh, this is the finish line, right? They always have such a ribbon structure at the end. So whoever goes through that ribbon first, he wins. But in these 24 Amis, there was no ribbon, there was no finish line. So Loi Masayim Milzim. There's no way to see who wins, who loses, who's first, who's second. So therefore, Pshitali, Muzdach Zayin Degab Mizbech Tanam, we mean the first four Amis, or the last four Amis, as we approach the Mizbeach. That's all Poshet, says Rav Papa. But Rav Papa is Shaila Zazeh. Are we talking about four Amis, or are we talking about six Amis? What do you mean? We said four Amis. What do you mean six Amis? Because as we said before, the last, or the first two Amis of the Mizbeach were overlapped by the top of the Kevesh. Why were they overlapped? Because as we discussed last week when we were going through the dimensions of the Mizbeach was, some people have said, it looks like a wedding cake. What's a wedding cake? It starts off 32 by 32 down below with the yesod, that's the outside foundation of an amma all around. Not all around, but at least on two, three sides. Fine. And then you go up five ammas, and then you hit the sovev, and then again the Mizbeach shrinks. It's no longer 30. It becomes at that point 28, until you go up all the way to the top of the Mizbeach, and then you have the four kronas, and then beyond the four kronas it's already 26. Etc. So it keeps on getting narrower and narrower. So the first two Amos is the Amma Yesod and the Amma Sovet. Amma Sovet means a ledge that protruded from the side of the Mizbeach. Both of those were covered up by the Kevesh.
Not this?
Yeah, exactly. No, those are mini questions. You can't see the from the picture that well. Those things on the side are mini ramps, besides the major ramp down the middle that are ramped to the right and to the left. Anyway, beginning back to Agamar. So the Gemara is asking now, the four Amis that we're talking about, do those include those two Amis which are part of the overlap? Or are we talking about two Amis, four Amis in addition to those two Amis which are overlapped, which would make four plus two? It's Boira Papa. Arba Amis Omru. Bahadei Ami Yesoid, the Amis Sovev. Does that include the Ami Yesoid, Amis Sovev? So therefore, start from the top of the ramp, go down four Amis. That is the finish line when you hit the beginning of the four Amis up to the Mizbeach. Oy, Dilma Barmi Ami Yesoid, the Amis Sovev. Maybe we mean the four Amis before you get to the last two Amis, which are covered over by the Kevesh as you hit the Mizbeach. So in other words, it's four plus the additional two. So Dumar Teiku, says Rapapa, Tishbi Tarz. How did you do the hitzpil? So remember, we had already in the Rashi in the Mishnah, everybody stick out your fingers, and we're going to go and count the fingers of the Kohen. Why do we have to stick out fingers? Why don't we just go and do a head count? You know, Yankel's head and Beryl's head, we just go through the heads and count how many heads there are. Silent Rebutzik. You're not allowed to go and count Klal Yisrael. A census is prohibited. This is talking about Shaul HaMelech. He was counting the soldiers in his army that were going to fight against Amoin. How did he count them? Bebozek. Now, what means bozek? The way the Gemara understands bozek at this point means with shards. If you look at the third line of the Rashi, bebozek. Bozek is shards, loshen shivrei charosim, shards of broken earthenware. Not to call echad yechad charis, everybody took such a little piece, hishlech lefan, they threw it on the ground, umana charosim, and afterwards, instead of counting the soldiers, they counted out these charosim, these pieces of shard, and that's how we knew how many people there were. Then Mefarshim asked, why do we have to go and bring a pasuk in Melachim that talks about counting up the shard? And beginning of Parshas Kisisa, it says that the way to go and count Klal Yisrael is through the Machtzis HaShekem. So what do they need shards for? So the answer is, that this din of the Machtzis Shekel is only because the counting that took place at that time was before the giving of the Torah, as well as it was as a result of the mass of the Eger. And therefore, that's why they had to do Machtzis Shekel, lechapra nafshesechem, as a kapara, because they sinned in the Eger. However, maybe for future generations, this is not necessary. Maybe you could go and count them a head count, as opposed to the fingers. Kamash Mulan, no. All generations, you're now going to go and make a census by counting the heads. You have to go and count the fingers. Maskel Ravashi, we might hide bozek lishan de mifziku. Who says that bozek means these broken shards of pottery, of earthenware? Vilmashmo de mosahu. Maybe it's the name of a town. Kirch Sivit says in the posik, vayimtsu adoni vezek bevezek. They found adoni vezek, he was the master, the king, the governor of Bezek. They found him in Bezek. So Bezek is the name of a place. And that being the case, when it says Vayifkidim, but Bezek maybe means that they were counted in the place called Bezek. How do you know that we're talking about shards? So you're right. Elamiach, I have another right. Vayisham Shol Nisam, Shol collected the people. Vayifkidim Batloim. Now this is talking about a later time where they're fighting not against Amir but against Amalek. And here Shaul said, instead of counting the shards, we're going to go and count the shepslach. They had huge amounts of shepslach Shaul had in his barn or in his stable or in his farm, whatever. And they pulled them all out. And each one of these soldiers would take one plan. He would send it back in. And therefore they counted all of the shepslach and not the shards. Why couldn't they just count the people themselves? Because you're not allowed to count the people. You have to go and count the tlach. Amr Blusa, Kalamunyas Yisrael, Oyver Belav. Whoever goes and counts Klal Yisrael, he's Oyver on a lav. Shenemetz in the Chos, Yismar, Yimispa, Bnei Yisrael, Kachal Yom, Asher Yub, Asher Lo Yimad, Velo Yisofer. Now, Parshim Pshat in the Pasuk is that this is a bracha, that Klal Yisrael will have so many people that their Mispa will be Kachal Yom, like the strands of sand. The grains. Oh, that's what I was looking for. Thank you. It's well ingrained with Brother Shai. That it's like the grains of the sand on the seashore. Ashleim adli yisafru, which is impossible to count. Can you go and count all of the grains of sand? It's impossible. That's a pasuk shot. However, the way the Gemara darshins this pasuk is that they're going to be like the sand. Ashleim, because you're not allowed to lo yima. Don't count them. Don't measure them. Rav Nachman Yitzchak Omar, Oyvim b'shnei lav. It's not just one lav, it's two lav, because the pasuk says lo yimad v'lo yisafer. Shnei v'lo yimad, yimad is from Russian bedida, don't measure them. V'lo yisafer means to count, don't count them. So if a person goes and counts Klal Yisrael, it's Oyvim on the two lav of lo yimad v'lo yisafer.
Omar, how is one of the lav? Is the pasuk in Navi?
When the Gemara calls it a lav, it might mean a rabbinical lav as opposed to a biblical lav. In other words, it might be a lav de Rabbanan, not a lav de Reis.
When we're counting fingers, we're still counting people. When we count fingers, we're counting.
It's a good question. I don't have the answer. Questions. Why that's different? Heads and fingers and noses and toes. I don't know.
That's
it's
a good question.
Rabbi Shmuel Barachmani, Rabbi Yonis and Rami. Rabbi Yonis asks here. Ksiv, it's impossible. You must miss Rami. So kachal yom. Ksiv, Hashem yimad v'lo yisafer. So Rabbi Yonis says, I have a steer. Miss Rami Yisrael is going to be like the grains of sand on the seashore. Now we all know that it's very, very difficult to go and count. But at least theoretically, you could count it, especially if you're using one of these modern day machines. You have them go, all the sand would be picked up by the machine, and then it would go, and it would go and count each grain of sand separately. But then it says shalim avli sofer means that it's impossible to go and count. It's difficult, but there's a finite amount. Le'im avli sofer sounds like it's infinite. Isn't that a stira? So Malikasha comes by Ritzayin Shulmokan. Comes by Shani Oysen Ritzayin Shulmokan. If the Yidin are doing what they're supposed to do, they're doing all the mitzvahs and masim, toivim avodas Hashem, then infinite. If unfortunately they're not doing Ritzayin Shulmokan, then it's a finite amount. It's not a large amount, but it's finite. Rabbi Omar, another reason we should Mabu Yoysim in the story, Lakasha, Kamidei Odom, Kamidei Shamoy. Bidei Odom, impossible. Le'imid v'li suffer. Humanly impossible. However, Kadosh Baruch Hu was able to go and count it. That's why it says the Kechol Hayom is for Hashalo Yisrael, the Umad V'Yisrael, distinguishing between Bidei Odom and Bidei Shemoyim. Kadosh Baruch Hu is able to go and count it, like the Kechol Hayom. But we, Lo Yimad V'Yisrael, impossible to count. Amram Ni Lo Yibar Idi Amr Shmuel, Kimish Nismad Odom Parnas Al Tzibu, when a person is appointed as the Roish, he's the head, then Misasher, he becomes wealthy. Of course, nowadays we would say this is an allusion to crooked politicians that automatically after they become higher office, they become wealthy. But that's not what the Gemara means over here. The Gemara means to say it's an automatic thing that a Kadosh Baruch Hu gives him a special bracha since he is Oseg in the Tzorech Tzibur. Kadosh Baruch Hu sends him Mashiach. How do I know? Meikar Ksif, we're talking about Shaul HaMelech. Initially, when he went to count all of these soldiers, he counted them. We have given him a bozek with shards. Sorry, years later, he counted up the shepslach. Why didn't he count shards? Because now he was wealthy, he had so many shepslach. That's why he now counted with shepslach. Maybe the shepslach didn't belong to Shaul HaMelech, maybe it belonged to the soldiers. In other words, the soldiers were supposed to bring their own shards and their own tloim. Why did the pasuk even tell us how they counted? It's already, it's not noteworthy, there's no importance. If you're telling me that this is telling us a message that Shaul HaMelech became rich because he became the Parnas al HaTzibur, well, then it's telling us something. It changed from shards to shepslach. But if you're telling me that each individual soldier brought it, so who cares? They could have brought something else. They could have brought widgets. Why do we have to talk about that they brought shards? Right, since we're talking about Shaul HaMelech and we're talking about the Melchama against Amalek, it says impossible, Yorah v'Nachal. They fought in the Nachal, in the valley. What did they fight? Ramani al Iske Nachal, talking about inyonim which are related to a valley. What do you mean? B'shosha Amalek Kadosh Baruch Hu Shaul Lech Mikis Es Amalek. Kadosh Baruch Hu said to Shaul that he should eradicate Amalek from top to bottom, all of the women, children, and the elders and everybody, including their king. The king was King Agog, and as we know, the Gemara is going to tell us shortly, Shaul HaMelech spared the life of Agog the Melech because he had Rachmanis on him. And Kadosh Baruch Hu had a great satana and Shaul, he said, we could have been finished with the Gansa Amalek and you kept them alive. Anyway, what did Shaul say? Kadosh Baruch Hu said, Lech Vikis Es Amalek, go and destroy them. Omar, and Shaul now had Rachmanis. And he said, Amal Nefesh Achas Amar Torah, Havei Egla Rufa, if you find one mace somehow out there in the wilderness, then you have to make a whole ceremony called the Egla Rufa. We have to go and bring Zakenim from the Bez and the Gordon Yushalayim, and then you have to go and do a measure, which is the closest town, and then the local Zakenim have to go and say, Yedeinu Leshafkos Adam Azev, Einenu Leiro. It's a very, very elaborate ceremony and ritual. And then eventually they have to decapitate an Egla. So that was only one Nefesh. Kol Nefoshes Halol, we're talking about killing thousands and thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of Amalek. Alach Skam Bekama, shouldn't they have Rachmanis? V'im Odu Chotev, no, mele the people. V'im Machotev, what did the behemoths do wrong? V'im Gedoilim Chotev, Ketanim Machotev, why should the children? Yotze Basko V'yom Eloi, Al Tehi Tzadik Arbe. Amalek, the Shaul HaMelech, it's nice that you should be have compassion and mercy, that's wonderful. But if I gave you a mitzvah to go and kill them and eradicate them, I meant it, and therefore, don't be more of a tzadik than a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Kadosh Baruch Hu has this cheshbonis. U'b'shosh Amalek Shaul, L'doi Gwadoimi. Here was just the opposite. Here, Shaul HaMelech was very angry at Noiv Ir Kehanim. David HaMelech was running from Shaul. He came to Noiv. The people in Noiv the Kehanim assumed that since previously David was working for and he was part of the entourage, part of Shaul, that helping out David would be helping out Shaul. So they helped out David HaMelech, and after that, when Shaul heard that Noiv Kahanim, they helped him out, he was furious. And he called Doigo Adoimi, and he said, so you have to go around, in other words, go back to Noiv, Ubegaba Kahanim, and go and kill out the Kahanim. And that's what he did. Doig unfortunately followed orders, and he killed out Noiv Kahanim. The Amaloi, and now Kodesh Baruch Hu says, oh, where's your Rachmanis now? Altir Shaharbi, don't be too much of a Russia. So therefore, unfortunately, Shaul made bad decisions both ways. Amravud, kamli choli v'le margish gavra de mori sayin. A person that a Kodesh Baruch Hu gives him special siyata d'shemaya, he was lecholi. He's not going to feel faint, v'le margish, and he won't have any feeling at all if a Kodesh Baruch Hu is on his side. What does that mean? So timor Shaul b'achas v'oltzeloi dovid b'shtayim v'oltzeloi. Shaul did one major chet v'oltzeloi, and a Kodesh Baruch Hu punished him till the nth degree. David tuchatoim v'li'otzeloi, and Baruch Hashem, he was saved, he was not punished like Shaul was. And the Gemara explains this in detail. Shaul b'yachas mai, what is the Shaul's bad sin? Mais and Agog, that the fact that he did not kill out the entire Amalek, he left Agog, and then Agog that night after Shaul speared him, Agog impregnated a woman, and as a result, Amalek continues, adayim bazeh, so it's all Shaul HaMelech's fault. So that's a mais and Agog. So on that, Otsaloi, the Gemara is going to say later on, Otsaloi means that he lost the Malucha that, we see another few words. Frank Gemara, you're telling me he only did one of it, but Ikamasin Noiv, Ir Kahanim, that he killed that Noiv Kahanim. So Tumah Mais of Agog, Siv, because of the Mais of Agog, that he did not kill Agog, he speared Agog's life, says in the Pasuk, Nicham Tikadosh Baruch Hu says, I changed my mind, I regret, Kim Lachti as Shaul Lamelech, that I allowed Shaul to be the king. So therefore, it was on that, and that took place, Nichamti took place before the Maisa of Noiv Er Kahanim. So therefore we see that because of this one Aveira, Otsaloi, he lost his Moluch. David, on the other hand, Bishtai, he did two Aveiras. Mind in what are those two? The Uriah, Uriachiti, Uda Hasosa. Uriachiti, everybody knows that because David the Melech wanted to marry Bathsheba, so he sent Uriah to the front lines, and Uriah eventually was killed in battle. Uda Hasosa, Hasosa means that the Yetzirah was Mesis, induced and provoked David HaMelech to go and make a census, to go and count Klai Yisrael, and as a result, the Pasuk says 70,000 people lost their lives in a terrible dever, in a terrible pestilence, as a result of this counting of the census. We'll talk about this again shortly. Anyway, but notwithstanding the fact that Uriah, that he had the story of Uriah and Hasasa, nevertheless, David HaMelech lived to the end of his Malucha, and the Malucha continued on for many generations. So you see, that although two bad sins, nevertheless, Le'otzeleh, because Baruch Hu was on his side. Frank Dimar, why are you only counting two? But Ikanam Masu Basheva. There's a third affair, Gzumtai, that even though Basheva and Uriah are related, it's still not the same. Because Uriah means that Uriah was killed, Basheva means that David HaMelech lives with Basheva when she was kind of in this twilight zone. It's true that Uriah had given her a get, but the get only becomes effective Lamafreya after Uriah died. Apparently Uriah was not killed yet. Only Lamafreya afterwards it turned out that it wasn't the get. But anyway, the Namaz of Basheva is still considered to be the Chalpach Psashtikl Chet. So Bazoi, why didn't he count that as number three? And Fidimah Hasim Ifumina, in fact, there David HaMelech was punished because of the Masa of Hashem. In which way he was punished? The Chsiv, V'esa Kivsa, Yishalim Arba Toim. What is this all about? Nathan and Novi came to David HaMelech right after the Maisa of Basheva, and he gave him a mushel. He told the mushel, he told him the following. Initially, he didn't tell him it was a mushel. Initially, he told him, I have a terrible story. What was the terrible story? They were next door neighbors. One neighbor was a very, very wealthy man, and the next guy, his next door neighbor, was a very poor man. And now the tax collector came and said, wealthy, you have to go and deliver a shepselah to the king as a tax. So what did the wealthy man do? The one that had 10,000 shepselah, he went next door and he took the loan seh that belonged to his neighbor and he gave that away to the tax collector.
Why?
And so when David HaMelech, why did he do this? Because he was a bad person.
I have answer.
Exactly. So Nathan and Novi said, what should we do to him? David HaMelech said, wow, he's terrible, what a Russia! This guy, we should go and he should be punished four times. Arbatoyim, four ply, four fault for this terrible chet. Can you imagine if it's a kivsa because of this one lousy kivsa? He's the chad oysher, he has millions, thousands of kvasim. He has to go and take the one from his neighbor. That was what David HaMelech passed. So Now, David Nassan Navi said to David HaMelech, the story never happened. This was just a parable, just a mashal. The mashal is, you, David HaMelech, you already have so many wives, and you already have so much ashiras. You had to steal from Uri Achiti, his one wife. You have already, kahena v'chayna, how many wives David HaMelech had? You have to go and steal his wife. And then immediately David HaMelech says, you're right, chatosi, avisi, peshati, 100% right. And he was punished fourfold, like he himself had said, we should go and punish the rich man and the poor man. What were the four? Yelid Amnon, Tamar, v'Avshalom. Yelid means that when David HaMelech lived with Bathsheba, she became pregnant, there was a child, and that child died. So that was the first punishment. Then we had Amnon. Everybody knows the story, unfortunately, of Amnon and Tamar. These were half-brother and sister, and Amnon desired to live with Tamar, and eventually he did live with her, and he violated her, unfortunately. So Amnon was eventually killed by Avshalom. Avshalom was another brother. Avshalom went and took vengeance against Amnon for violating Tamar. Therefore, Amnon died. Tamar was violated. And Avshalom himself eventually was killed as part of his rebellion, when he rebelled against David HaMelech. So therefore, David HaMelech lost these four children. The Yelid that he was supposed to have in Bathsheba, the Amnon, Tamar, and Avshalom, who were all brothers and sisters, half-brothers, half-sisters, all of them passed away. So they got the four punishments. So therefore, what was Rav Huna said initially, that David was punished, he did two Averis, but ultimately he wasn't punished. We said, what about Bathsheba? The Eritaka was punished. In terms of those two, Uri and Hasasa, he came out free. There too he was punished. In the case of the Hasasa of the census, the Chassidut says that after David HaMelech counted, he had the Klal Yisrael counted, the Yitan Hashem Dever, and a Dever came down. The Pasuk doesn't tell us, the Gemara doesn't tell us, but 70,000 Jews never passed away, by Eis Moed, and Dever and many of them were killed. So you see that there was a punishment for the census. He himself wasn't punished. Never Klal Yisrael was punished, but he himself was not punished for this sin. In the case of the Bathsheba, he also wasn't personally. It was his four children. Okay, it's a loss, but it's not gufe. He himself, his body. So it's gonna lie. Afruim migufe. No, even his body was also hit. In addition to that arbatoyim that we spoke about, the four. Shishulayin started David. David HaMelech became Mitzayra for 6 months. Uparshu Menu Sanhedrin. The Sanhedrin left him. The Stalkim Menu Shchina, and the Shchina left him. The Chassidus said the Pasuk, Yeshuvu Li Yireyach VeYoyde Edusecha. I want the Yoyde Edus, meaning the Sanhedrin, should go and return to me. Uksiv Hashiva Li Sesayin Yishach. I want the Simcha of being with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, the Yeshua of Hashem, because both of them left. Only 6 months later, after Tzaras left, he was able to be restored. Another Aveda that David Melech did, and he was Mekabel Lashon Hara. Now what's this Lashon Hara? The Gemara doesn't go into it. Rashi tells us a little bit about it. At the time of David HaMelech's fight with Avshalom, there was a great person by the name of Mephibosheth. Mephibosheth was the son of Yonason. Yonason was the son of Shalom Melech. And Mephibosheth was originally on the side together with David. Then there was an Eved by the name of Tziva. And Tziva, Tzadik Yud Vez Aleph, Tziva. And Tziva went and tattled and rattled on him, on Mephibosheth, and told David HaMelech, I want you to know that Mephibosheth is no longer on your side, he's now on the side of Avshalom. So Bazoi and David HaMelech listened to that Lashon Hara. Is the Chasim, and he did another Aveira, who's Makabal Lashon Hara. And the one Kishmuli, I'm like, David Lashon Hara. No, he did not accept the Lashon Hara. So therefore, he did not sin, he didn't. You know, when Tziva told him, he said, get out of here, I don't believe you, it's not true, I'm not Makabal. So therefore, he wasn't even Aveir. But what about the Rav? Didn't he say Rav holds that he was an Aveir, and Rav Huna said there was only two? Rav Nami di Omar kibul davar lashon hara. He also got punished for that. What was the punishment? The Omar Rav Yud Omar Rav, b'shosh Omar le'davon b'fiboshes. Amar ti'at v'tziva t'chalko es ha-sada. Yotze basko v'yomar lo'y rechovam y'rovam y'chalko es ha-malchus. What is this all about? Again, initially, David accepted Tziva's Lashon Hara, that Mephibosheth had joined Avshalom, and therefore he said to Tziva, even though Tziva was an Eved, he said, Eved, Tziva, because of the fact that you told me these facts, I'm so angry at Mephibosheth. Mephibosheth's chelik in the estate of his father Yonason, whatever his possessions are, I hand them all over to you. See if it all belongs to you. Later on, when Mephibosheth arrived on the scene, and David said to him, where were you until now? He said, David HaMelech, I couldn't come until you were restored to the Malchus, and I was waiting every single day saying to him that you should go and win. So then David HaMelech felt bad that he had accepted the Lashon Hara from Tziva, and he said, you know what? I'm not sure who's right and who's wrong, but it seems to me Mephibosheth is not such a bad guy after all. And he took all the possessions that he had handed over to Tziva, and he says, you know what? We're going to settle it 50-50. Tziva will take 50, and you'll take the other 50%. When that happened, says the Gemara, at that point, Amarti, when David HaMelech said to Mephibosheth, I now paskin that you should split the field. Yatzer Baskel. Baskel came out. That Malchus that you had is also going to be split down the middle, because subsequently, after Shlomo HaMelech passed away, Rechavim took over, but Yerovam took off the other half, as we know, and that's how he had the Malchus Yisrael and the Malchus based on it. Fine. It says right to the Pasuk that when Shlomo HaMelech became Melech ben Shana, Shaul v'Malkai. Now, Pashup Shan, the Pasuk is that in the first year of Shaul's Malucha, the first year of his kingdom, but the Gemara darshes ben Shana, that Shaul was 1 year old v'Malkai when he became king. It's impossible that a king 1 year old. Amravuna kiven Shana shloitoam tamchet. It shows you that he was a pure individual, Shaul HaMelech, when he became king. Didn't do one sin. That means ben Shana like a baby. Maybe we're talking about the fakir, that he was soiled and dirty, as if you have a baby that is constantly soiled, gesundheit, soils its diapers, and if it doesn't have a diaper, it soils everything else. So maybe that's what we meant, that Shaul HaMelech was full of soil, not that he was pure. So Gemara, when Rav Nachman suggested that, Achvil Rav Nachman siyuta b'chalmei, that night when he went to sleep, he had a terrible nightmare. And Rashi says siyuta means that Malachi Chabola, bad Malachim came to Malachi Pachad came to him, and they said, what are you saying about Shaul HaMelech, that he was a dirty king from the first moment that he became king? He was full of sin. So when he woke up in the morning, he was so startled by this nightmare. Amen aneisi lecham atzmoi Shaul ben Kish. Shaul, I subjugate my will to you. I'm sorry. I apologize. I didn't mean to go and offend you, Shaul ben Kish. The next night he had another nightmare. Omar, the next morning when he woke up, he said, "Aneis lechem atzvi Shaul ben Kish, Melech Yisrael." Oh, by adding Melech Yisrael, from that point on, he only had pleasant dreams, no more nightmares. So therefore, don't start up with biblical figures. These are holy people, and don't go and say, "Well, maybe he wasn't so holy. Maybe he was dirty." No. Rav Nachman Yitzchak, don't say that. Right? Omer Yidom Shmuel. Rav Nei Malin Imshchem Malchus Beishol. Why didn't Malchus Beishol extend beyond the few years that he was king? Neishle Hoyeboy Shum Doifi. Because there was no bad family history. His family history was pure. Now that's not a good reason why he shouldn't have Malchus. Whenever you appoint a new leader over the country, it should always be a leader that has some sort of kupish shotzim. Kupish shotzim is a nice way of saying that he has a closet of
box of creeping creatures.
Yeah, okay, so it means that a closet of family secrets that you don't want people to talk about.
A skeleton
in the closet. So why do we want that the leader should have a skeleton in the closet? Shem tezuch taite olav. Because just in case he wants to become arrogant and pompous, we say, turn around and see your parents, your grandparents, your great-grandparents, look at the somewhat colorful history of your family, the skeletons in the closet, so that should take away his being pompous and arrogant. However, Shaul HaMelech was pure. He didn't have that type of lineage. Everything was pure until he was still Adam Arishayim, and so therefore he didn't have that kupish shrat. Why was Shaul punishment? Because he was moichel on his kavod. Now it's a wonderful thing for a person to be mavater, to go and wave kavod and to say, nah, it's okay. Yeah. And if somebody offends you, we are going to have the Gemara tomorrow, a very famous chazal. If somebody offends you, somebody insults you, don't respond, don't fight back. Just let it pass, and the other person will go away. If you just fight him, he's just going to insult you more. So you might as well just ignore it and let it go. But that's a regular individual. Here we're talking about a king. A king has to go, and because of the covenant, Malchus, he's not allowed to waive his honor. If a person goes and spits on the king, he's spitting on the whole country. He spit chas v'shalom against Elizabeth. It's not just against this old lady. It's against the whole country of England, the whole United Kingdom. It's an offense to the whole country. It's a word by Malchus. So, Shaul should not have been moichel kvaydish. It says, uvenei b'lial. Amru, b'nei b'lial means a bunch of lowlifes, a bunch of shkutzim. They said about Shaul, ma yoshiyenu, how is he going to help us? Vayivazu, ma yoshiyenu zeh. Vayivazu, and they shamed him, they embarrassed him. They didn't bring up a present. Vayikimachrish, and he was quiet, he didn't say a word. Uksiv, there's another similar passage. And he also said all types of bad stuff against Shaul, and Shaul was quiet. The Gemara, although on a personal level, that's a very worthy midah to have, but on the level of being a melech, that's not a worthy trait. And that's why he was punished, and he lost his malchus because he didn't keep the covet of the malchus intact. Stop over here, Rabbi Yisai. We continue Mitzvah tomorrow. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you.
Baruch Hashem, we're back. Back on schedule.